Hi, I'm John Jenkins, Managing Editor of thecorporatecouncil.net, and welcome to today's Timely Takes podcast. My guests today are two individuals who are no doubt familiar to many of our listeners, Kyle Pinder and Brad Goldberg. Kyle's a partner, Morris Nichols, and over the past month or so has become SEC Chairman Paul Atkins' favorite Delaware lawyer. Brad Goldberg is a partner at Cooley, and Kyle and Brad both participated recently as panelists in our proxy disclosure and executive compensation conferences. Kyle has been making the rounds of the podcast circuit lately because of the incredible amount of attention that his recent article, The Non-Binding Bind, Reframing Precatory Stockholder Proposals Under Delaware Law, has attracted from practitioners, academics, advocacy groups, and regulators, and most notably, as I referenced earlier, SEC Chair Paul Atkins, who suggested that the arguments in that article could have a significant impact on how the SEC approaches precatory shareholder proposals under Rule 14a8. We're also fortunate to have Brad join us because not only does he have extensive experience dealing with governance issues in his role as co-head of Cooley's corporate governance and securities regulation practice, but he's also one of the individuals that Kyle asked to review the article in advance of its publication. So he's particularly well positioned to provide insights on the topics addressed in it. So Kyle and Brad, welcome to the podcast. Let's dive right in. Kyle, your article contends that there is no inherent right under Delaware law for a stockholder to submit precatory proposals. Can you provide an overview of the rationale for that position?
Yeah, sure. So I think with any question in Delaware, you always start with the, you know, what's near and dear to my heart, the DGCL or the Delaware General Corporation Law. And if you open it up and you flip through the hundreds of pages, you'll find no reference to precatory proposals, whether they're, you know, shareholder proposals or management proposals. So from there, you kind of have to start looking for other sections. Like, well, where could this right, if it exists, where's it hiding? The one potential is in section 211B, which holder meetings and authorizes the transaction of other proper business other than the election of directors. And then the question is that a broad catch-all that is meant to effectively give shareholders plenary authority to call a vote on any non-binding proposal they want, or is it more limited? And I think I've taken the view, and I think based on Delaware precedent to date, at least based on that, the courts would take the view that you have to read that grant of, to the extent it's authority under 211B together with DGCL section 141A, which gives the board and confers on the board the power and authority to manage the company's business and affairs. From that, the courts in Delaware and courts interpreting Delaware law have read 141A as imposing a board-centric governance model, or, you know, effectively director primacy, if you're talking about it in the buzzwords that you see in a lot of academic articles, versus, you know, shareholder primacy versus director primacy. From a board-centric model, I think 141A is best viewed as a gap-filling mechanism that, you know, there are specific grants of authority in the statute for, you know, when the board needs to approve certain things and when shareholders have a right to vote or have a governance right on something. But in the absence of an express delineation of authority, I think the board-centric model would suggest that authority rests with the managers. And from there, you kind of look to, okay, there are shareholder rights that...
Delaware cases have identified three fundamental rights that are identified in the DGCL by express reference or necessary implication, and that's, you know, the right to sue, the right to sell, and relevant here, the right to vote. From those fundamental rights flow certain subsidiary rights that the courts have observed, and, you know, one way to think of those subsidiary rights is that the exercise of the fundamental right would be illusory if you didn't have, or if a shareholder didn't have the subsidiary right flowing from it. For example, shareholders have the right to nominate or to elect directors, but the right to vote in the election of directors would be illusory or ineffective if shareholders didn't have the concomitant right to nominate their own slate.
So then I go to, okay, well, if it's any of those, if you know, the right to submit a proposal or a precatory proposal is housed or flows from any of those three, it's got to be voting rights, because we're talking about shareholder meetings. We're not talking about selling stock or suing.
Yeah.
looking at the Delaware case law that's evolved in the voting rights context, those cases have all kind of started from the fact pattern of director action that infringes on the shareholder franchise on a matter that the shareholders have a right to vote on. And to date, the only those cases have identified three categories of voting rights, or matters on which shareholders have a right to vote. And those are one, the election of directors; two, matters that are committed to a shareholder vote by law, regulation, or charter or bylaw provision; and then three, matters that directors submit or allow to be submitted or don't object to being submitted for a shareholder vote at a meeting.
Kind of a related t topic, and I don't get Brad. I don't know if you had anything to add to that, but jump in if you do it. People talk in terms of what's proper business for a shareholder at a shareholders meeting, and does the DGCL define that, and why don't precatory proposals fall under that definition?
Yeah, so the DGCL does not define what proper business is, and I think from there, looking at the various ways different regulators and different sources of authority talk about what shareholders can vote on, I think the closest thing that comes to defining proper business is the kind of the 14A(i)(1) test, which is it a proper subject on which shareholders can vote under state law?
Very good. 14A(8) is sort of the federal gloss on this issue. And what role has 14A(8) traditionally played in terms of enabling stockholders to submit precatory proposals? And how would you differentiate the federal rule from Delaware state law?
Yeah, I can jump in on this one, and then feel free to jump in, Kyle. But 14A(8) it's about allowing stockholders to get their proposals into the company's proxy statement and proxy card. It's essentially proxy access, but for shareholder proposals. Absent that right, proponents would need to solicit their own proxy, file their own proxy statement for their own proposals, which most proponents are not keen to do given the cost involved. And so I think that's really the fundamental difference here, is that 14A(8) at its heart does not really stipulate anything about what's proper to be brought at a annual meeting under Delaware law. It's about access to the company's proxy statement.
Yeah, I think I agree with that, Brad. I think at least that's how most people look at 14A(8). It's a way to allow stockholders to more effectively vindicate their state law rights. It's not, it's the majority view is it's not a substantive grant of additional rights by fiat of federal law.
Right.
So it starts with the state.
And the SEC's role in this over the years has been the arbiter of the various exclusions under the rule, and providing the no action relief to the extent it's available for companies. But so that's basically the fundamental differentiation between the two. Delaware law governs what's brought at the meeting. It doesn't regulate what goes into the company's proxy.
Yeah, I think the historic kind of back and forth on, especially the one of the bases for exclusion under 14A(8) is a shareholder proposal that's not a proper subject matter for action at the meeting. The company doesn't need to include that. There admittedly isn't a lot of law on that question anywhere. I mean, there's a New York case is suggested is, but that's one case from the 1950s. So the SEC was kind of tasked with interpreting silence. So they did. They kind of created their own, I think, even cases and commentators have said their own common law of what a proper subject is. And they drew a distinction between binding and non-binding proposals. And quote, in their experience, non-binding proposals are generally proper under state law.
Well, that sort of is a nice segue to the next question I wanted to get into, and that is, one of the things that's attracted a lot of attention to your article, Kyle, is the comment that Chairman Atkins made in a recent speech, indicating that, citing your article, and indicating the staff would be favorably inclined to an argument that a precatory proposal might be excludable under Rule 14A8 I1 as not being a proper subject for shareholder action under Delaware law, if that was supported by an opinion of Delaware Council. Now, I know opinion issues are always a topic of conversation among members of the Delaware Bar. Is this something that people have been talking about a lot? And based on those discussions, are there specific issues that have been raised as concerns in rendering such an opinion? Or are there categories of precatory proposal that are tougher issues than others might be?
Yeah. So I think definitely a partners of, the corporate partners at my firm, and I'm sure at the other firms that have Delaware offices or exclusively in Delaware, had similar conversations of, can we give an opinion? What would the opinion look like? And kind of what are the confines of, of when we would give it? And I think, speaking for myself here, not for the firm, obviously, or definitely any other firm, I think I have kind of been separating out the types of proposals. So, generally, precatory proposals come in a few flavors, but you can kind of divide it in terms of governance on the one hand and ENS, so environmental, social, civic, political on the other. Now, from an analytical perspective, based on my argument, there is no difference between the subject matter. I both agree with that, and I think that's right. However, I think from an opinion perspective, you're more likely to get a law firm to weigh in when it comes to a non-governance proposal. And there are a few reasons for that. One is that the history of 14A8 is the social and political and environmental proposals really didn't become a major thing until the rule was 20, 30, 40 years old. So they weren't the original purpose of 14A8 or the original intent of what people expected shareholders to try to do. The way the rule's been interpreted over time, and it's gone back and forth, but initially it was expressed you weren't supposed to be able to bring up matters of societal or environmental concerns that were just general. And I think the staff's been back and forth on when, what is a proper social policy that, transcends ordinary business that shareholders can bring. But that back and forth goes to kind of support that shareholders really haven't had a even expectation, definitive expectation that they'd be able to bring these proposals even under 14A8. So between the history of 14A8 and just the idea of it's going to be easier to probably explain before in front of a Delaware court that we're not trying to exclude a proposal to de-stagger, to hide from potential governance reform. This really is something that's not mainly related to the business of the company, something shareholders historically haven't weighed in on, and our board has made it a fiduciary decision that this is just this is the type of proposal that we don't think is an efficient use of corporate resources and time.
It's just a pressure test that a little bit, and I don't disagree that it certainly optically and maybe in the court system, it will be easier to have this sort of follow through to where I think, Atkins suggests it can go. But as you were initially saying, I don't read anything in Atkins' speech as suggesting that they were intending to differentiate between the types of proposals. And to your point, if the conclusion is there is no inherent right to a precatory proposal, then just sort of on first principles, right, it shouldn't matter what kind of proposal it is.
Yeah, and I think, taking kind of in reverse order, I still agree. My logic and my analysis and my reasoning, it doesn't distinguish by type of proposal. And on that, I think a court can agree with me technically and say, yep, there's not a technical right. But there are certain circumstances where even if a board can get a proposal out, should they? And that's kind of where courts of equity have come in the past to say, yeah, you can exclude a governance proposal, but boy, it doesn't, it's not a good look, and we're not, we don't think you should do it when it comes to, you know, de-staggering and something that, you know, could at least tangentially related to like a, you know, an entrenchment type motive. On Chairman Atkins' speech, I mean, I guess I've been interpreting it at least the initial kind of the initial speech as still focused on environmental and social, because I think the chairman, he outlined three pillars on which he's building, you know, his administration, his term as chair. And one of them is to depoliticize shareholder meetings. And kind of when he explained the most politically charged aspect of shareholder meetings, I think the most important thing he wanted to address was these environmental and social proposals that are kind of special, a lot of times special interest based, or, you know, have an extremely low passage rate or rate of support.
Yeah,
it's
interesting. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to follow up and say, you know, picking up on something that you had said a moment ago, Kyle, about, you know, the issues of being in front of an equity court. Are we talking about the, you know, twice testing shareholder precatory proposals as the Chancery Court has done in other areas?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. I mean, they, you know, kind of any, I think that's that Delaware courts often, I mean, they oftentimes go back to that twice tested methodology. Just, I think, as a matter of first principle, just because you can do something doesn't mean you necessarily should in every circumstance. And Schnell, you know, the case is going back a long time, just say it's not always the right decision to use your power.
But I was going to say, especially in light of the recent SEC guidance that they're, you know, getting out of the no action letter business, at least this year, and, you know, who knows for how long, if maybe forever. The concept of, you know, is someone going to actually, you know, get the opinion and put in an I-1 letter, in some ways, the fact that there's not going to be a no action letter process, you know, it seems like the ENS type proposals, you know, people are going to more likely, if they really don't want it in there, they would just exclude it now, right, and put in the J letter, and then it's out, versus, you know, going the opinion route. At least, you know, I'm not hearing a lot of companies that are eager to go be the first in line to get the opinion. But it's the governance proposal where you didn't really have an exclusionary basis that actually was set up better for, in my view, going for the opinion. But I know that's not, you know, where you would prefer it to start with. So it's sort of an interesting situation.
Yeah, and even on the, I guess, the kind of the, I guess, the new regime for notification with a representation that, you know, you can, you plan to exclude, and, you know, we have a legitimate unqualified basis to exclude on a, you know, an I-7 argument. I think the companies I've talked to, that they're so far not, you know, head over heels excited to go that route, because you're not really getting that kind of hug from your regulator that you like out of a no action letter. So if you have a well-heeled proponent, you could end up in litigation.
Yeah, no, we're hearing the same concerns, and talking about some of this in our alert that's coming out soon. But I agree with you. I think in a sort of odd result could be that we actually see more proposals this year in proxy statements than less, because
that's what I've been kind of hearing so far. Like, you know, as we're 3 days, 4 days into this, is kind of talking to people, that's what it seems like it's going to happen, which makes me, you know, hearing kind of the I guess the proponent side, it seems like that there may be a little overreaction on the, you know, this combined with Atkins' prior, or the Chairman Atkins' prior comments, is the end, you know, the end of shareholder proposals generally. So I just think that's a bit of overreaction.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of stealing from my final closing words when we got to the end of this, but I agree with you. I think some of this initial blowback reaction that this is the end of governance, you know, as we know it, and is likely an overreaction, and people should sort of wait to judge until we see where things go in this private ordering, because as we've been saying, we could end up in a situation where there are more proposals in than there were before.
I mean, think about it too, from like a company that's even just thinking about the I-1 argument. I mean, two of the biggest considerations are, do I want to risk litigation? I guess in the first instance, you know, you could still have to litigate the question in front of the Delaware Supreme Court if the SEC certifies that legal question of, you know, is Kyle right? And even if they do, if you're not the first company up, if you're, you know, one of the second, third, so on and so forth, if they do try to exclude a governance proposal and a proponent nonetheless sues, you could still end up in litigation, even if you're ultimately successful. So there's the potential litigation risk. And then there's just the investor blowback of, it's a proposal that people kind of have started to get behind. There's a little bit of a groundswell. How's that going to look next year? How's that going to go for you? What's ISS going to say? Are you setting yourself up for a more intrusive type of shareholder engagement next annual meeting, withhold campaign, binding bylaw proposal, proxy contest? There are so many, like, reputational or litigation potential risks that I think you're not going to see people tripping over each other to try to use the I-1 argument to exclude any and every precatory proposal.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds in the upcoming proxy season. let's talk a little bit another topic that is front and center for most public companies these days, and that's activism. And you touched in your article the implications of a conclusion that Delaware doesn't permit precatory proposals. What are the implications on that for activism in general, and in particular on things like the Zero Slate campaigns that have surfaced in recent years?
Yeah. So I think in terms of activism, if a company wants to go the route of seeking exclusion and the court agrees with the Supreme Court agrees with my conclusion, it takes a relatively certain avenue for activism off the table, because it, you know, effectively the company always has a trump card to say, we don't, as a just a technical matter, we don't think this is proper, so we're not including it in our proxy materials. And where that on its own could, like I said, push people to doing more of withhold campaigns, proxy contests, or binding bylaws. The Zero Slate campaigns, I think it depends on how you want to define it. If you're thinking like a Warrior Met Cole Zero Slate campaign, I don't think that's going to be a likely next step, because those were all, you know, that was, we're not running our own slate, we're just using the company's universal proxy card to just have the company's nominees and vote on these five precatory proposals. So if they're precatory, I think the company would still say, okay, I'm not telling you that we're ruling them out of order at the meeting for the same reasons. So yeah, I don't know that you're going to see an uptick in those types of Warrior Met Cole campaigns.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting because it, and we've talked about this, Kyle, but because we've been worried about Warrior Met Cole, and I agree, it probably makes the strategy less attractive for the reason you state, that there's more limited ability to pile on, you know, an unlimited number of shareholder proposals onto the universal proxy card. Although on the other hand, you know, proposing binding bylaw amendments, you know, could give it some more teeth depending on what you're proposing. So I don't, it's not 100% clear to me how it plays out, but I tend to agree with you that it, on its face initially, seems, it certainly takes away my, you know, one of my big concerns is, you know, somebody putting up a slate or a few directors on the universal proxy card and then giving you 100, you know, precatory proposals that have no ward limits or any restrictions or any exclusions to be able to get them out of your, you know, get them out. I think this position on precatory proposals goes a long way towards, you know, fixing that, what I, at least fixing, quote unquote, what I think is a potential big issue.
We touched on bylaws in a different context in the discussion we just went through, but Kyle, you also talk about the idea of adopting bylaws to regulate precatory proposals. Can you talk a little bit about that, the benefits and risk of doing something like that, how Delaware courts might approach those kind of bylaws?
That's funny. I think, you know, when I started writing the paper in the beginning of the summer, the kind of precatory proposal bylaw, or the bylaw that regulates and, you know, provides and the ability to submit precatory proposals, was the initial purpose of the paper. Because, you know, it was not clear under Delaware law, to the extent that the that proposal right is an inherent fundamental right, whether you can, right, how far you can go in a bylaw to regulate it. So I think the bylaws are, they're, I guess, in one view of the world, a compromise. You know, companies, you know, maybe they don't love precatory proposals, but they are, like I said, one of the least intrusive or disruptive means of allowing shareholders kind of either call it talk therapy, call it an outlet for frustration or views. But, you know, it also gives you the ability of regulation around that, you know, to have this means of communication and engagement among each other and with management, but we're going to have clear rules on it. And that way, you know, everyone knows the rules of the road going in. So it's kind of a checklist of, you can bring a proposal if it hits, you know, these clear hurdles.
The counterpoint to a universal proxy, a proxy access bylaw, you know, the same concepts I could see coming into play. You'd have the ownership threshold, the holding period, and you get to some, I assume, template bylaw fairly quickly through private ordering, the same way we saw it happen in the proxy access space for board nominations.
I think in terms of like market consensus or like a kind of a quasi model, I think it'll take a little longer than proxy access did, because and most of the access bylaws were, you know, modeled on 14A11 with adding, you know, the aggregation limit, but they had kind of a relatively well, thought out and drafted model. No one's going to want to probably start from 14A8 as it's drafted today, because everyone hates it for different reasons on both sides of the aisle. So I think it is going to be a little bit more of a kind of a discussion of, you know, with institutional investors, some of the big advisory firms maybe, and issuers, of what everyone can live with that doesn't make everyone's lives miserable and piss everybody off too much. Good compromise.
Are there actions that the Delaware legislature should take to clarify issues surrounding a precatory proposal bylaws that you anticipate people are going to be looking for if companies, as many might, head down this path?
So, and I think that's an important point. So, for the reasons I explained in my paper, you know, I guess going down the list, you know, no inherent right, because no inherent right, you can have bylaws today, but, you know, that's my argument, my view. There's not a Supreme Court case on point today. There's not a statute. So a public company that wants to put in that type of bylaw today is going to probably run into what people refer to as the first mover problem, where, you know, you're the bold one in terms of governance reform. So you're going to pay the price by being sued and having to litigate it and actually have the court come out and make a determination of whether that bylaw is valid. Delaware, you know, subject to maybe one thing Brad and I will talk about in a minute, you know, Delaware could step in to try to put some parameters around that and explain, you know, and provide those types of bylaws that where companies give the right to submit proposals and regulate the right are valid. Kind of like, you know, 112, DGCL section 112 does for proxy access bylaws for nominations.
Yeah, and I would also just say, and Kyle won't want to hear this, but we also could use some guidance, I think, from the other states, you know, on this as well. You know, Nevada, Texas.
I guess Texas has already given you the guidance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we know what they think.
To the extent it works.
And then, you know, California, we have, you know, not a small number of California clients, public company clients as well. So, you know, I think it would be nice to have some of these states weigh in on this.
Well, I think for proxy access too, right? Like the nominations. I mean, whether you're a Delaware company or, you know, some other incorporated somewhere else, I mean, the proxy access form, kind of, they're all, you know, 95% the same.
That's right.
You know, and we've covered a lot of ground here. In wrapping this up, one of the things, there's been a ton of commentary, obviously, Kyle, on your article, but there also seems a fair amount of hip shooting going on about what it actually says. So I'd like to ask you and Brad to both kind of share, what do you think people are getting wrong about the arguments that are being made in the article?
Well, let me go first and defend my good friend Kyle here. because I've seen more than one article or blog out there that has been mischaracterizing either his article or the statements that he's made following publishing the article. And in particular, I think one point that Kyle made earlier, but that he's been clarifying in some of his, some of his statements, is that Delaware law does not prohibit precatory proposals outright. And that is an important point, but that is, I think, been taken out of context to suggest that he's somehow walking back the conclusions from the article. And he can speak for himself, but all that is meant to do is just to clarify, there's no right for shareholders to bring precatory proposals under the Delaware. Is preventing a board from deciding to bring precatory proposals if they want to. And that's an important distinction. And I think that's the distinction he's trying to make is, we have non-binding votes already, right? We have non-binding auditor ratification votes, and nothing is preventing a company from deciding that they're going to, notwithstanding, the recent staff guidance and the ability to exclude, that they're just going to decide to continue to put in precatory proposals in their proxy statement that come in.
That's exactly the point I was trying to make, though. I guess when I at the a webinar I did with CII, I didn't make that clearly enough, but yeah, it's not that. When I say Delaware law doesn't prohibit precatory proposals, it's that, yeah, if there is another source of authority or like an external grant of authority by charter, by statute, by board determination, by bylaw, that, these are things we're going to let shareholders do, or if you're the government, we're telling you have to let shareholders do, that doesn't violate Delaware law. But that doesn't mean that shareholders have that inherent right to still submit those proposals. There has to be some source of authority that they are pointing to actually force the proposal up for a vote. And that can be a board, like Brad said, a board deciding, I'm not going to move to exclude this proposal this year. That's, for many reasons, I'm just going to let it through. That Delaware doesn't prohibit that. What it prohibits, but my view is what it prohibits is if a shareholder tries to bring that type of proposal over the objection of the board. If the board saying, no, we don't think this is... We don't want, or we don't think it's proper for you to bring this proposal this year for X, Y, or Z reason, and we're not letting you do it. That's the only proposal I'd say is prohibited.
Right, and we wouldn't be having a conversation about potential
bylaws
Exactly.
Yeah, it helps if you read the article, I guess, is the bottom line before you you decide what it says. Yeah,
it's funny when you do the a podcast or a webinar and you see one sentence or so taken out of the half an hour you talked as the takeaway.
It's the price of fame, my friend.
Oh, it is.
Well, listen, thank you so much, both of you, for that. This has been a very interesting conversation. Appreciate you spending the time with us, and I know our listeners will as well. So thanks very much, and look forward to speaking with you both again.